Moin und willkommen zu einer neuen Folge des New Minds AI Podcast. Und diese Folge hätte locker 2 Stunden füllen können, denn ich hatte heute Logan Kilpatrick zu Gast. Logan ist Group Product Manager bei Google DeepMind und für mich eine der zentralsten Persönlichkeiten, wenn es um das Google AI Studio und die Gemini API geht und damit auch die Schnittstelle zu Millionen von Entwicklern und Entwicklerinnen, die jeden Tag mit KI bauen und Dinge programmieren und umsetzen. Und darum geht's auch in dieser Folge, denn ich spreche mit ihm über die Modelle, die Entwicklung, die Geschwindigkeit von Modellen, aber auch von Google, warum Google in den letzten Wochen so viel Gas gibt und was eigentlich die Modelle so ausmacht. Wir sprechen über Benchmarks, was für Benchmarks überhaupt noch relevant haben und was eigentlich Pokémon Red damit zu tun hat. Und wir sprechen über Skills, wenn KI in der Lage ist, alles ganz, ganz schnell umzusetzen und Intelligenz quasi schnell und kostenlos bereitstellt. Was für Fähigkeiten sollte man eigentlich noch lernen, auch als junger Mensch? Und was hat vielleicht laut Logan in Zukunft dann noch Relevanz? Also eine sehr, sehr spannende Folge. Es lohnt sich reinzuhören. Ich hätte definitiv noch mehr Fragen gestellt, aber ich glaube, hier haben wir schon einen guten Rundumschlag und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Spaß mit dieser Folge. Und damit lass uns mal starten.
New Minds AI. Eure wöchentliche Dosis KI mit Jens und Max. Seid dabei, wenn wir die Zukunft erkunden.
So, Logan, welcome actually back to the show. I think we talked about everything about AI and what Google is doing 8 months ago. And in AI terms, it feels like a lifetime. So many things changed and I want to talk with you what you guys did in the last couple of months, weeks, basically. So thanks for taking your time. Thanks for being on the show again.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I feel like 8 months does feel like an eternity. It feels like AI years are like dog years these days. So I feel like I've aged 5 years in the last 8 months. So hopefully yeah, I have wisdom crazy to impart in this conversation now because of
So I don't want to ask you because I also never know how does the world look like 8 months ago, because it's hard to remember because everything's so fast and at the same time sometimes even slow. But I want to talk about what you guys are doing. So I remember back in the very, very old days, Google Bard, I used to make fun of Google's AI tools because it was just nice. And now in the last couple of months and weeks, you were shipping so, so hard. So maybe especially on the latest updates, we have Nano Banana, Nano Banana Pro, Gemini 3, Gemini 3 Flash, everything we're going to talk about a little bit. What changed? Why are guys shipping so much and so fast in the last couple of months?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think there's a bunch of different dimensions to this. I think one of them is our sort of approach, at least the whole time that I've been at Google for roughly the last 2 years now. And I think even since the whole Gemini project started, I think December 2023, something like that, the approach has been to do it iteratively. And I think if you're close to like how building great models works, like it's this iterative process. Like it is a, in some sense, it's as much research as it is product. It's as much engineering as it is research. So like you need many, many shots on goal. And I think the sort of expectation initially when Google started doing a bunch of this stuff was sort of like reasonably high. And I think the reality is like for any company sort of doing this work, regardless of whether it's Google or someone else, like it just takes shots on goal. And I think the thing I'm proud of is that we've taken shots on goal. We've sort of made the iteration happen. And like that iteration speed has actually increased, which I think is maybe what you see. The sort of the success in AI boils down to the iteration speed and then how long you have. And I think the nice thing for us is we've had now, you know, something like 2.5 or 3 years doing this iteration and sort of making this progress to get to the point now where we've sort of things are working. And, you know, there's always new dimensions of this challenge. And I think like one of the new dimensions of the challenge for us is historically, like even with some of the previous models that were actually really strong, they weren't sort of like fully deployed across Google super quickly. It took time to make that happen. I think one of the coolest things for the flash moment today is like, not only do we have this model that is absolutely incredible, outperforms 2.5 Pro, which is our previous state-of-the-art model, and even outperforms 3 Pro on some dimensions, But the best part is that it's like available across the suite of Google products, and it's available to everyone. And that is like as equally hard as doing the model. It is equally as hard to make it available across all these products. And it actually is, the level of complexity in these launches has gone up so much. Back to like, I'm thinking of like, you know, Gemini 1.5 Flash as an example at Google I/O 2024. And just like how much more complicated, how large the collaboration has become inside of Google to make this happen. It's honestly astonishing. It's like one of the largest product and engineering efforts probably in the world is what's happening inside of Google for Gemini, which is incredible to see.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, we see more and more that you guys connecting tools, connecting research, connecting development more and more. Things like NotebookLM, for example, get more and more integrated in other tools. So it's really cool to see that you guys connecting the dots, and that's of course make the project a little bit bigger than just releasing something. And I was also impressed to be honest when released I think Gemini 3 Pro and was rolled out on the day on everything, not just on AI Studio or Gemini, but also on Search and stuff. So I can just imagine what kind of scale it is. Do you have any idea or any rough number how many people are actually working on such a model rollout basically?
Yeah, that's a great question. I was having a conversation actually with Korai, who's our CTO and Google's chief AI architect, and we were at a dinner, and he was saying that historically, you know, when DeepMind was originally created, you know, they would do these academic papers that had 20 collaborators on them, and people in academia would be like, "What do you mean you have 20 people working on this thing? That's crazy. That doesn't happen in academia. That's you know, there's no way that that's possible. There's got to be, it's got to be like a group project where, you know, four people are doing all the work, the other 20 are doing nothing." And that wasn't the case then. And I think now you sort of look at like, it's on the order of like many thousands of people involved in these, like, and it depends how you slice it, but like are involved in these launches, which is crazy. And it's like that level of coordination to make it happen across all the Google product services, to tell the story, to do all the work leading up across, you know, safety testing to everything, to like standing up infrastructure and TPUs to, you know, every other dimension of the story. And it's incredible and it's awe-inspiring to see it happen. And then we do it, and I was sitting there this morning as we were launching Flash, and then after Flash was launched, and like it's the most business as usual. People are locked in and like pushing the rock up the hill, as you can imagine. Like it is, it's honestly cool to see. Like it's cool to see the level of professionalism that people have now with getting these models out the door. And actually now, like, it's like also the fun that people have doing this. Like, I think before we were sort of, you know, pulling our hair out in some sense. And I think it's gotten a lot more fun, which is cool to see.
Yeah, I would love to talk with you about fun in a minute. But are you guys still surprised on the demand that is such a release or any kind of release are getting? Because I mean, you should get used to, okay, we're releasing something and everyone's jumping on that. Are you still getting surprised about the demand?
It blows me away every time still. And I think this is actually the interesting thing, which is we do the release, we sort of pull off the miracle of like getting the infrastructure in the right place so that we can actually like service some fraction of the demand. Like we're still way over constrained. Like we could probably be doing many factors over the amount of like total, you know, however you want to slice it, token volume or request volume, whatever it is. And we just don't have enough chips to make that happen. But the interesting thing is like, we sort of pull it off, we make it happen. We sort of raise the floor, on like the baseline level of demand. And then, and like you know, we can see this in our like metrics where like basically there's this huge shooting up of the metrics and then sort of the sort of demand relatively flat lines. And then it happens again, but like the floor keeps going up and up and up and up and up. So it is, it's crazy to see. Like it's still surprising. And I think I forgot what the numbers were last year, but it was like some many tens of X's increase in demand. And like, I wouldn't be surprised, even at the massive order of magnitude of numbers we're at now, if we continue to see that level of increase going into next year, especially with like agents and everything, like token consumption, as an example, is just like going to go up as we build these intelligent systems.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then at the end consumer, you're still kind of annoyed when something takes a little bit longer than it used to be before, because just millions of people use it at the same time. Actually, I have the feeling sometimes, especially when the US is awake, that if the performance in Europe is a little bit slower. this could be the case.
It depends. It depends on the model and the sort of configuration. Some of them don't have that sort of latency provided. It actually depends on like the underlying infrastructure that's being set up. So you might see it with some models and not other models. But it is true that like under peak load for some models, like you do see some amount of latency increase when you're under peak load.
It's crazy. I mean, just the whole of engine and thinking about the demand is crazy. But let's talk a little bit about fun. I mean, we probably going to talk most about Gemini and the coding aspects as well. But recently, with Nano Banana Pro, you released the state of the art models for image editing and also image generation, and I was asking myself when it came along. So you, the serious guys at Google, naming something with banana in it. Is there a story behind the name? Is it just randomly and we just stick to that and you played the meme?
Yeah, there is a story behind the name. Nana, who's one of the PMs for multimodal stuff, including image generation models. Like, we had to come up with a code name for the model, and her nickname, I think growing up, was Nano Banana or something like that. and that's where it came from. So she's the one who named it. And then it sort of just took on a life of its own, and people, the name resonated with people. And now I'm sort of, you can't see because we're audio only, but I have my Gemini sweater on that has, you know, a banana on the back of it. So it really has taken on a life of its own. It is a good, you know, there's a lot of lessons and stories in all this. I don't think it's something, we've had this conversation internally, I don't think it's something that works repeatably if we started coming up with all these crazy names for the models. Mm-hmm. But it's fun to do something different every once in a while. And I think that's the story to me with Nano Banana, is it's fun to do something different.
I mean, you never know, maybe it sticks. I think in the SEO game, you had like the penguin update and the panda updates or animal focused updates. So maybe it's called all fruity in the future and your point. and were there, especially when the Gemini 3 and Pro release were, and the Nano Banana Pro, were there some things that people did with the model that really surprised you and was like, okay, wow, didn't know that this, the model was capable of doing that, or this, it was a level of creativity I couldn't imagine before?
Yeah, one of them specifically for Nano Banana Pro was that like infographic capability that has really taken the world by storm wasn't something that was like the model team wasn't like trying to hill climb infographic quality. They were trying to make text rendering capability was one of the things that that they do care about, and it's like one of the North Star metrics to like actually track overall image generation and editing quality is like how good is text, just because it's like easy to evaluate whether text is good objectively or not. And then another one is like on Nano Banana Pro was like, what happens when you take this really capable, smart model and you bring together grounding with Google search. And sort of this really interesting capability of like grounding image generation in like real information and facts that are coming from Google search, I think was not something that like, again, was like, you know, the North Star metric for the model team. It just sort of, you know, this is the beauty of building Gemini, is you have all these capabilities that come together into a single model and you get to benefit. So that's been awesome. I think the last one is, and this one is like somewhat more intentional, and I think folks are going to feel this, but I think the code generation capability for 3 Flash continues to blow me away. Like, I think we were running a bunch of like internal tests with users, and the outcome of like 3 Flash versus 3 Pro was, if you give people a faster model that's like roughly as capable as Pro is along certain dimensions, what you see specifically for vibe coding was like more people building stuff. People are building more things. People are building them faster than they're able to before. And actually, like, retention and all this other stuff like goes up and to the right as well. So it was really, really cool to see like what happens when you bring a super capable model to the world that like levels up the floor for people who are building stuff. Like, you see people build more stuff, and that's like the most, that's the outcome that we want. Like, our team wakes up every day because and comes and does this work because we want to enable people to build really cool experiences. So it's cool that like model dimensions actually enable people to build more things and build them faster than they were able to before.
Yeah, I think there's such a good reason to wake up and enable people. Actually, the infographic thing also blew me away, because I at one experiment, I added like my LinkedIn content to Nano by Nano Pro, and then thought, okay, wow, this was detailed. And also with the grounding, was unexpected good that grounding makes such a difference there. And I actually vibe coded an app, released it on LinkedIn, and in roughly 1 week, 160,000 images got generated just in the German region, basically. It was crazy. It was blew me up. Everyone had fun with that. And I vibe coded it, so it was also very good learning. And I was impressed by the speed of the Flash model when it comes to coding. So when I used Pro, I was like, okay, you did something else. You waited until Pro is finished. And I remember in the first iterations, I was like, oh, it's already done. Oh, okay, that was quick. Wow. One shot at something, and it was just done with a screenshot. It was like, wow, holy shit, it was fast. So it really makes a difference in output. But let's talk about Flash for a minute. So for the people who have no idea what Gemini 3 Flash is, maybe you can give a brief introduction, what it is and why it's good.
Yeah, that's a great question. So Gemini 3 Flash is our sort of new frontier intelligence model that's designed to sort of scale and be the model that's like your daily driver and it's available to everyone. So across all of our sort of consumer products, whether it's Google with AI mode, or whether it's the Gemini app, or if you're a developer and you're trying to vibe code and build stuff inside of AI Studio, if you're an enterprise customer across, you know, Google Workspace and Google Cloud. So the model is sort of universally available across these surfaces, and it's like super intelligent. I think it's like the third, or, you know, depends what benchmarks, and I think we can talk more about benchmarks later, but on artificial analysis index score, which is sort of like trying to aggregate like overall model intelligence, it's the third most intelligent model in the world. And it's like dramatically less expensive than the models that are sort of one and two before it. So I think it's like packs a huge punch for this small model that it is. And it's not, again, it's not surprising to me. I think we've had this sort of storied past of the Flash models. Like, again, I mentioned 1.5 Flash back at I/O 2024 really put Gemini, from at least from a developer perspective, on the map, and has been the model that has, you know, was one of our most used models. And we landed 2.0 Flash last December, 2.5 Flash sort of like raised the bar again as like a super intelligent model, not just a fast model. And 3.0 Flash, like, there's this meme that a bunch of people on our team and across Google are posting, which is like, you know, speed or intelligence or cheap, and it was like pick three, and you can actually have all three of those, which is really cool. So I think that's what you get from Flash, which is really exciting. And I think, again, actually I was on a call with Josh who leads all the product teams in DeepMind, and he was saying earlier that like developers and builders like no longer having to make that choice between speed, intelligence, and cost, like, isn't actually something that we've seen before. So it's a super exciting moment that we're sitting here and now people can just use a model that sort of crushes it along all three of those dimensions. And there's obviously nuance depending on like how your requirements skew in some of these different cases. So you might still need to make a trade-off decision. It's not that the silver bullet for everyone, but for a lot of people, it will sort of check all three boxes, which is just super cool to see.
Yeah, it's crazy. And maybe we can walk us through maybe the idea behind Pro and Flash. So, I mean, if you're creating a model that's super fast and also very capable, why Pro? Why not just get instant to just fast, powerful versions?
Yeah, we definitely... So the logic is the Pro, the research that goes into Pro... and the model training that goes into Pro directly impacts Flash. So like you actually don't get the Flash story the way that it is, at least right now. You'd get a different story, but you don't get the Flash that we have today if you don't also have Pro. So the way that it works is like having, you want to sort of in the most unconstrained way, push the frontier of intelligence from a model perspective. And you learn a bunch of stuff about like, again, the scaling laws have to, you know, they're not actually a law. It's like a bunch of people working, you know, extremely hard for a long period of time with lots of resources invested in order to make them true. And that's sort of the story of Pro is that level of dedication. And then that model like directly gets distilled down and sort of transformed into the Flash model. So you don't, if you didn't have an incredible Pro model, again, you wouldn't have Flash. So you need both to make mm-hmm. it happen.
Okay, got it. And could you maybe explain for everyone who has no idea what model distillation is, how does it work in a nutshell?
Yeah, the high level point for how distillation works is, you just take a large model and you are able to basically take a bunch of the information from it, a bunch of the world knowledge, and condense it down into like a smaller parameter count model. There's a whole bunch of like science and research around this. You are able to get like some amount of capability transfer between the larger model to the smaller model, but you do lose a little bit. And some of the things you lose, for example, is just like the level of depth of world knowledge is one example, because you could think of your parameter count as like your, you know, storage size, or that's maybe not the perfect analogy, but there's definitely a loss when you go from big to small. But a lot of the underlying capabilities actually do transfer, which is really cool. So like some raw intelligence and some of the way that the model works, I think does seamlessly work between both models. And then again, that like continues to happen for even smaller models. So you can take Flash and you can distill down to Flash Lite, which is our smallest model available for developers, which isn't yet available. So that's sort of this concept of scaling ladders is super common.
Okay, super interesting. Thanks for clarifying that. And maybe let's talk about speed a little bit. So for me, of course, it's cool to have faster output of AI Studio, faster vibe coding. That's cool. But maybe from the bigger picture, from your perspective, what kind of impact does speed in terms of LLM usage basically have for you? And what stops technology from being just instant instead of just very, very fast?
Yeah. Well, I would love instant. I think there is still some of this, like you want the models to keep you, you don't want the model to be the thing that takes you out of the flow. And I feel like sometimes still today, even with Flash, it's incredibly fast and super capable, but sometimes it is the thing that takes you out of flow because you're waiting a little bit. So I think that's one of the exciting things, is it gets closer to keeping you in flow state. And then I think what happens is what happens when you have a fast model is there's this expansionary effect. And again, we actually like can directly see this like with data that we measure in AI Studio. What happens when you have a model that's faster for vibe coding is people vibe code more. There's something interesting about the speed enabling people to build more stuff, which I think is really exciting. And I think we see that in AI Studio. People have a finite amount of time to build, and I think a finite time to solve some problem. And when you give them a faster model, they're just able to do more stuff. I think there's also something really interesting around what this means for like new users. And I think there's something about like we're very early in this AI story still, which is exciting. And like but like the reality is like a lot of people still don't know, you know, what's the technology can do, and they're not on the frontier and all these things. So when you show up to a product and the product takes minutes or hours, and you have to do all this work in order to like get it to like be useful and show value as sort of a user, and you sort of hear all this like high level noise about AI is so powerful and it's going to change the world and do all these things, and you show up, you're like, this doesn't seem like that. And I've had this experience personally many, many times where I'm like, you know, I'm using this product and I'm like, is this really like AI is really going to change the world? Because I'm sitting here and like, I'm sort of frustrated by this experience. And I think that speed aspect is like one of the things where you can like really blow people away and be like, wait, holy crap. Like I asked this question within a second, I'm getting an answer back. Or I wanted to, the vibe coding use case is just so top of mind for me because I spent so much of my time doing this. But like I asked to build a website and wait, holy crap, all of a sudden I have this website up and running and it's working and, you know, 90 seconds or 60 seconds or 30 seconds. And like, that's a crazy experience for somebody who has never built software before to like have a working functional app in the order of a minute. So I think there's something magical. And I think this is like part of the story of like how you get this like much wider audience of people, the speed being part of the thing that enables this much wider audience of people to like really believe that AI is going to be impactful for them and like start to get that level of value. So I think it's like critically important if you want to make AI that benefits all of humanity, it has to be fast. So I'm super happy that the Flash model like pushes that frontier.
Yeah, it's so cool. I vibe coded a Chrome extension for AI Studio to give me a ping and change the tab icon when it was done. So I haven't to wait. Or
we can build this into AI Studio for you. So this is I'll take your feature request. We'll make this happen. I think the team is actually playing around with a bunch of prototypes of this.
But the thing is, with Flash, we don't need that anymore.
It's true. Exactly. Yeah. It's beautiful.
Cool. Let's talk a little bit about benchmarks. So would love to get your point of view on that. So we see every new model releases some kind of list. These kind of benchmarks are hitting. We are better than this provider and stuff like that. So let's zoom out a little bit. So why does models just keep getting better? Is it just we bought more GPUs or TPUs and threw it more compute? Why is there in a wall yet?
It's a good question. Back to the point. Well, I think there's many dimensions to this. One, like the research progress continues, the compute scaling continues, which is exciting. I think you're actually like getting the product. We talk a lot about this at Google, and like this is the internal philosophy, and we mentioned this externally as well. But like this idea that you're sort of iterating on the models with customers through the lens of products is also important. So it's like the product is actually a new scaling dimension that didn't exist before. Historically, it was like this, you know, the scaling laws were talking about like compute and pre-training scale. And that's not the case anymore. It's like you also have all of these new scaling dimensions. You have RL training to as another scaling dimension, or test time compute. You have the product experience and like the scaffolding in the product as another scaling dimension in parallel. So I think you're seeing more and more of these things like tools, the model having access to all these new tools, and sort of it's sort of similar to the product scaffolding, but like is another scaling dimension. So you sort of bundle all that together and you actually have this like really powerful force to like continue to make progress on the models, which is really cool. So I think we'll continue to see that happen. It's not free. Like you really like there's many incredible people across Google and at the other major labs who are sort of like pushing, and the open source community even, who are like pushing and like earn the scaling laws are earned. So I think that continues to be true. The benchmark story is also interesting because I think the benchmarks tell like a sliver of the story, which is interesting. Like you need some, you know, pseudo objective way of like describing progress, and like evals and benchmarks are like a lossy way of doing that is my personal perspective. In some cases it translates really well. In a lot of cases, like you make gains on the model that aren't represented in evals and benchmarks, and like how do you quantify those? And there's all the vibe stuff. People describe the vibe, the smell, the feel of the model is like very much a real thing that people are always talking about. So I think that's like a whole other dimension that's not captured. And then there's this North Star question, which is like, what does it look like, you know, to build generally intelligent systems? And I think if you actually look at a lot of the evals right now, like they're not even close to measuring what we would consider, even like Arc AGI and some of these ones, which I think are great. And, you know, Mike and Francois and those folks are doing an incredible job. Like, is it really measuring general intelligence? Like, I think there's good questions to be asked around, like, what are you measuring? Because ultimately, it sort of goes back to where progress is made. Progress is made in some cases, you don't measure progress being made. In a lot of cases, you measure progress is made where you're measuring it, because mm-hmm. you have this explicit mechanism, and because researchers ultimately need something to go and like test their hypothesis against, and it happens to be these benchmarks. So it's a super fluid space. My guess is things look dramatically different in the next couple of years. I don't know how, I haven't thought deeply about it, but I would just imagine that like the current era of what we're doing from like an eval benchmark perspective looks very different. Just like also as a lot of these benchmarks saturate, like, you know, HLE, yep. Humanities Last Exam was, you know, single digit percentage points from the most state-of-the-art model early this year. And I think even Flash is like 47% or something like that, 3 flash on that benchmark. And like, so I feel like a couple more turns of the crank and like, it's not really going to be a helpful metric to track anymore. And that's already the case on a lot of these other metrics as well. Like AIM is another one, AIME, you know, the models are basically all 100% at this now. So like, it's not super useful to track that metric. They keep updating them and stuff like that. But yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah, it's crazy how the models keep crushing the benchmarks more and more. Also, you mentioned Arc AGI, and now the version 2 is getting, I think, 50-something is the benchmark, and the models keep crushing it. And this makes me wonder if it really makes sense to have like this kind of benchmarks if it's just a matter of time until it's 100% in most cases.
Yeah. It is important. I think as an intermediary point to measure progress, it is important. Like, I think they're exceptionally useful. And I think for all the people who are like building difficult evals and all these things, like I'm appreciative of them doing that because like you have to measure progress. Otherwise, like it's also like more broadly a way for the world to know how things are going. So even if you don't, and I think that's sort of like the, you know, one of the things for the Arc AGI team is like, they want to help be sort of the beacon to tell the world how AI progress is occurring and like make sure that more people understand that in an objective way, which I think is really important. So I'm glad that folks are going after this work and trying to build these types of evals and benchmarks.
I mean, luckily there's the kind of best benchmark that came out, the Pokemon Red benchmark. <Just kidding. laughs>
It is a good one.
But maybe you can tell the people why is it good to test if a model is capable of playing Pokemon Red or even beating it?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think like games, you know, my perspective is influenced by like the DeepMind perspective, which is that I think Demis and the team originally had like a massive level of investment as sort of like gameplay and sort of self gameplay and RL being the sort of reinforcement learning in a bunch of these environments. Being sort of on the path to AGI. And it was like one of the original bets of DeepMind as a company. I think like the research progress was true and correct and it worked. And it sort of gave us a lot of the initial infrastructure from a research standpoint and a technical standpoint that actually powers a lot of what's happening today. I think the reason that the games work well is because it is this like, which is different than a lot of other examples. A lot of the other examples, like even if you look at like Sweebench Verified or Sweebench Pro or Humanities Last Exam or even Arc AGI, like these are very, maybe they're in some cases multi-turn, but like they're very like single turn. They're very like solve this one very specific problem. There's like no context carrying over. There's like the state space It is relatively fixed. So there's like all these dimensions, which like, okay, you're like, great, those are important. And those are like, you're measuring something very specifically, but there's not a lot of variance and there's not a lot of like randomness and all this other stuff. And I think one of the cool things about, you know, Gemini playing Pokemon as an example is that, you know, there's a lot of variance. And there is like, it is getting closer to what you would approximate as like the sort of quote unquote real world, even though it's, you know, a 2D game that's taking place. And you can imagine as like the models get better and better at that, you sort of start, you know, what's the next iteration of this? Like, I think models being in like embodied form, you know, with robots actually going and doing work is going to be one of the things that is measured by a bunch of these benchmarks. Like, how well can a model successfully, you know, go through this really complicated physical environment and put away your dishes or do your laundry or whatever it is? And how well does that generalize across laundry machines and different sort of home configurations and all this stuff? So I think that that's the part that gets me interested, is that it just feels like the, you know, some of these games are actually, and like Pokemon, I think just because of the nature of the like story and the arc, feels more similar to like real life than some of the like less like online evals, even if what they're measuring is also super important. So it's also fun. I think there's like a fun part of it too. Yeah. Back to the conversation we had before, it's like cool. It's like, you know, Pokemon's awesome. Like people want to see how well AI could do. Could they do as well? All that stuff. So it's fun.
And just imagine a couple of years maybe that you just press play and the game is done. Basically, yeah. If you're talking about speed, this would feel weird, I guess.
It's going to be interesting. I think, I think it's a fun, there's some fun novelty about it. So I'm interested in like the future of like how you sort of get these autonomous systems to like go and do a bunch of things that humans actually aren't that interested in doing. I think Gemini playing Pokemon is interesting, but I'm like, I would kind of rather, like, I kind of want to play Pokemon. So it is interesting. Like it's a fun metric to track. But yeah, I think it's also useful that we have more like very grounded, academically rigorous benchmarks.
Yeah. But the fun along the way is kind of good. Before we talk I'd love to talk to you about vibe coding and stuff. I would love to stick to one specific topic when it comes about speed, when it comes about creating stuff. Nano bananas are probably one example. Do you see any issue there with the kind of degrade in training data? Everyone is being able to create their apps, their images, their content faster, instant, and in a better quality. Is there any kind of model collapse when, I don't know, Gemini 4 or Gemini 5 is only trained on its own output?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think like practically, at least for our models, we do have this technology called SynthID, which lets us watermark text and images and stuff like that. So you can actually validate whether or not it came from with like reasonable accuracy, validate whether or not it was like output that generated by Gemini. And that continues to roll out across like other dimensions as well, which is nice, and other modalities. So I do think that will like help, but I also think like where you see gains from like a data perspective is like coming much more from like really heavily curated, expert, hard to get, bespoke new data. I think it's coming less from like, you know, if you were to train Gemini on every output that Gemini has ever created, like I don't think that actually, maybe in some cases would lead to some gain, but I think there's the gains because of reinforcement learning, because of synthetic data generation. If you have like very, very high quality, a small set of high quality data, and then use RL and synthetic data generation to like magnify the impact of that data, I think that's how a lot of the gains for these reasoning models have actually come in the last year. So I think that progress will continue regardless of whether there's like lots of AI generated content on the internet.
So the race for the good data and the high quality data, the exclusive data will be probably continue. Let's talk a little bit about vibe coding. I mean, this is your, you said it before, a big chunk of your time goes into vibe coding and helping people, supporting people building stuff. We spoke 8 months ago, so it's been a while. What is your current, from your perspective, the current state of vibe coding? What's the usage? Is it something people take seriously? Is it still like the, okay, vibe coding is just building some code mess and not really useful? Did it change over the last couple of months, especially with increasingly better models?
Yeah, I do think it's changed. I think the vibe has shifted. I also think it's like anything new, people want to sort of try to poke holes in. I think reasonably so, because I think there's definitely some like horror stories of things people vibe coded and they sort of didn't know what they were getting themselves into. But I do think the trend continues. Like millions of more people, like we went from AI Studio's vibe coding product experience, like soft launched in at Google I/O this year in May. And we have millions of people now vibe coding every month, actually, in AI Studio, and building with Gemini and creating apps and stuff like that. And I think that has like roughly been similar across the ecosystem. Like some of these products were around a little bit longer, but they've all done really, really well. And part of this is because there's been this massive market expansion. Like technically anyone and everyone can build things. Part of the challenge is like this discoverability and awareness piece, mm-hmm. which is like, do you self-identify as a builder? Or are you sort of like, you don't think, like I've met many people in my life who, you know, could easily build something and they just like don't think of themselves as somebody who would build something. So how do you get to those audiences, I think, is this like long tail problem to be solved. And I think Google is actually really well positioned to like help solve some of this, because we have huge amounts of distribution and like product experiences that folks wouldn't have thought of before. So I think my sort of like TLDR on the state of things is that it's going really well. There's a huge amount of progress that's been made just in the last 6 months. And I think like the rate of progress is really cool to see, both again from like my vantage point, seeing the work that our team is doing, but also like externally in the ecosystem and other products. I think if we look at, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months from now, I think you're going to see that leap happen again. Like my guess is there's another 10x increase in the overall size of the market. Wow. And that these products just become so much more capable. Like I think you're sort of going up the capability curve as far as like how sophisticated of an app you can actually build and reliably get out there. And I think by I/O this year, I'm hopeful that like we'll be like basically you'll be able to build anything you want vibe coding. There will be some like, you know, maybe some rough edges in certain areas, but like you'll be able to get a fully working company and or product up and running in AI Studio, on your phone, even like on the go mobile. Wow. Vibe coding, I think it's going to be massive. So that will be really cool. And then I think it'll be interesting to see what happens in the last half of the year. So it should be, I think I've got some hypotheses, but we'll have to check in 6 months and then I'll give you my suggestions.
Nice. I think the biggest challenge probably is for people who haven't been a developer or builder or something to actually get this kind of feeling, I see a problem here and I'm able to build a solution for that. And I think once you figure it out this once or twice in your journey, there's no coming back. I witnessed this myself. It's crazy. That's very cool. But if everyone is able to build their tools and their software and their companies even, what is your point of view on also the kind of unique experience for everyone? You recently announced a generated interface, but also things like Project Disco, where basically everything is unique from tabs from website to search results as well with a known user interface. Is this the future, that everything is unique for everyone? And what does it do with the shared reality, kind of the shared web reality?
Yeah, I think there will be an option for personalized software, and I think we're actually seeing that take place right now. But actually, I think principally people want the thing. Like people are like, oh no, I want the thing that everyone else has. Like why? Like don't give me this new different thing. Like I would actually like to be on the same playing field and have the same experience that, you know, the rest of my company does, or the rest of X, Y, and Z cohort does, or whatever it is. So I do think we'll still see these like large, very, very sort of like similar across the board experiences between people as far as like the internet goes. So I think you'll get both, which I think is the short answer.
Okay, got it. And of course, this will probably has an impact on SaaS, this whole SaaS market as well, because if people are able to kind of get what they want without all the fluff and all these sales cycles or something, that's going to have an impact for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of what I've talked to companies about is like folks are like building more internal tooling themselves, which is really interesting. I think there's like a logical stopping place for some of this. So like, I don't think it like scales infinitely, and like actually the distribution and the sort of relationship you have with your customers as sort of like a SaaS business, as an example, I think is incredibly important. So I think there's many, many SaaS companies who are going to do super well because they're going to empower, you know, the people at the companies they have relationships with to like go and build these tools and do all this stuff. And I think that will certainly play out. But there are definitely things where like people are now just going to like go and build the tool to do the thing that they want. And I get emails from people all the time being like, hey, I'm at a law firm and we've never been able to like spend the $100,000 to like go find somebody to build the tool that we wanted to solve this very specific problem. And we used AI Studio and we just built it and like it solves this problem for us, which is really, really cool to see. So I think you'll see more of those stories, which is exciting, because it's also, in a lot of cases, it's things that wouldn't have existed otherwise because the barrier was too high. It was in the stack rank of 1,000 things. This was, you know, thing number 600 and you're never going to get to it, but would be high value and impactful. So I think it's awesome to see those things see the light of day.
Yeah, I mean, we're building stuff for our team that probably nobody on earth really needs, but it really makes an impact for us. So that's really cool. I actually got two more questions. One regarding the future. Actually, both are regarding the future. So let's talk about skills and what to learn, basically. I mean, if models are there, okay, intelligence is cheap and fast. So I got a one-year-old son. Should he study? What should he learn? Should it be computer science because it's still important? What is your point on that? It's hard to answer.
Yeah, I don't know at what age he would start learning computer science, but definitely not one, unless he's very advanced. So you've got a few years to sort of start making these decisions. There's some of the stuff that like, I don't know how clear it is that it can be taught. I think one of the things is like high agency. Like I think the world is sort of, you know, rewards high agency in so many ways. Just like being the person to do the thing, I think is it like moves the needle and pushes the rock up the hill. And I think, again, you're rewarded for doing that work. So as I think about like what I want to embody, that's one of the things. I do think computer science will still be important. Like the way of thinking about how to solve problems and breaking them down and building reusable systems and all these other things, I think are like, there is many, many life lessons learned in computer science that have nothing to do with the syntax of like how to write functional code. And actually, interestingly, like I think a computer science to the bad extent in some cases, like in a lot of cases, like computer science academic programs actually like wouldn't even teach you the syntax to write code. So you'd have this like theoretical understanding of computer science. You'd show up to try to get a job and they'd be like, all right, now write high performant Python code. And you're like, I didn't take that class, or whatever it is, Rust code or whatever, or, you know, be a web developer. So I think that actually will continue. So I think there's this like way and we'll sort of, maybe they'll reformulate the name or something to not be computer science. They'll call it something else, but
problem
the like general principles of like understanding statistics and probability and problem solving and sort of system thinking and all that stuff, I think is going to be incredibly useful. Like, I think these are some of the like most relevant skill, like subtly most relevant skills in my life today. It's not like I wake up and I'm like, how do I think about this problem from a systems perspective? It's just like baked into my default operating mode, and it sort of just like is passively always on. So I think that will, again, that will continue. I think there's something interesting about like, and this has always been the case, but I think we'll see this even more so in the future, this ability to communicate like from an in-person standpoint and like face-to-face with people, I think will also be really interesting, because in an era where your sort of like digital intelligence is, you know, you can sort of not like fake it, but like there's a lot of stuff that you can do digitally that maybe you wouldn't be able to like physically show up and do, especially like asynchronously. I think there's like something interesting that will happen physically when you bring people together, if you sort of are able to be who you really are. So I think about that a lot for myself, and just like for our team, as like we think about like in a different lens, but like how do we show up online for the world, but like also how does our team show up and how does Google show up like physically in person for people as well. And there's like some visceralness of like the warmth of humanity that you feel when you sort of physically show up with people, and I think it's going to get more and more important. So
I mean, that's a kind of good development, I guess, if the warmth of people and connection is getting more and more important. That's a cool thing to look forward to. To my last question. So if you would be able to dream and think about Gemini 5 or 6, so maybe 2 years in the future, I don't know, depending on the speed you're gaining. Is there like one capability that you wish, so not just smarter, but one specific capability that you would love to have, like infinite memory or, I don't know, something else? Is there one thing that on your bucket list?
Yeah, I'll give you two things. One of them is I want a single model that fuses all the capabilities that we have today. Actually, if you look at like the products that are built around the models, some of them actually have bespoke model capabilities. So like our text-to-speech model, our live audio model for, you know, real-time speech translation and like human audio back and forth, Veo, Nano Banana, these are actually all independent, based on the same underlying infrastructure, but like have their own flares from a model perspective. I want a single model. It'll make everyone's lives way easier to have that. And there's a lot of sort of like research and engineering progress towards hopefully making that true. From a capability standpoint, and this is where there's like a blurry line in the future, 2 years out, it's actually a great example, in my opinion, of like how blurry it will be at that point, because I think 5 years out, it's almost a certainty. But like the models are becoming systems and agents themselves. So like a capability that I want, historically we'd associate this with products, but like what I want from these future systems is I want proactivity. I think there's so much of, you know, I value productivity so much in my life when like someone comes to me and says, hey, I need this thing to be successful. And if they weren't doing that, like I wouldn't be able to get anything done. And like our teams wouldn't be able to get anything done because nobody would know that other people actually needed them for some input. And that's kind of how it is from the models today, where like, as I think about me sort of operating in my job, like if I had to go to every person on my team, be like, so what do you need? And like really sort of pull it out of them, like what they need to be successful and what they're working on and all this stuff, like it'd be incredibly painful. The best outcome is like people are like, hey, I need these five things, please make them happen for me so that I can keep doing this impactful work that I want to do. I think the models will get to the point hopefully in the future. I don't have any good product experiences today that I use that do this. But I want this as the North Star. I want the model to sort of push me along and tell me the things that it needs to help amplify the work that I'm doing. And today it's like, I have to be it's all the agency is on me. I have to be the one to push. And it's exhausting because I'm, you know, I don't have infinite energy and bandwidth to do these things.
It's crazy if you think about that, and this might be the future. It's crazy how the connection with technology changed just over the last couple of years, basically. And you at Google played a big role in that. Well, Logan, thanks for your time. Probably could talk for hours now, but I think this gives a rough idea of what you guys are building, what you're up to. Thanks for your opinion on benchmarks, on the impact of speed, of flash, and please ship more, not more, but please keep the speed of shipping. I don't think it's more as possible. Thanks a lot for your time.
Yeah, awesome. We'll keep shipping for you. Thank you for staying up and recording this conversation very late. I appreciate you for making the time.
Cool. Thanks for that. And see you in 8 months.
Hopefully see you next time.